Okay, recording, thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Welcome to the Audit Committee on the 21st of November, everybody. As ever, it's going to be recorded, made available. It could be filmed, recorded. It's outside of the Council's control. Please make sure you've got your phones on silent and that you've got Siri, Cortana, shall I shout it so that they respond to me, switched off, as it could be a breach of GDPR. We do have 2.5 hours time limit. Hopefully we won't have to stop towards the end and just consider the last item of meeting. We've got a few visitors today. We've got Anishka, who is a student at Nottingham Trent. She's here on work placement. Do you want to?
Yeah, I'm a university student doing work placement with the council. So yeah.
Very good. So coming to see how things run. And obviously we've got Mark joining us online and Neil joining us online. And possibly Councillor Popley online.
Yes, we're expecting him, so perhaps he'll appear shortly. Also expecting Councillor Hadji Nicolaou in person, so we'll see.
So we did have apologies from him originally, but then he said he would be here, but so he could come bursting through the door any moment. Okay, if we move on to item two, which is minutes of the previous meeting. Okay, if we go through the minutes of the meeting, because there were a few issues that are kind of carried forward from there. So on page 3 of the minutes, which is page 5 of your pack, so there were overdue recommendations from the internal audit plan for asset management, commercial letting, and asbestos management. And if no progress had been made by January 24, they would be coming to attend the meeting of the audit committee at the end of January. So obviously we won't know that for a while unless we haven't had any updates as yet, I presume.
No. I think it's one that will flag before the next agenda and make sure we have a look for them.
Yeah. Okay. On page 4 or page 6 of the pack, we had changing constitution to include another independent member on the audit committee, and that we agreed the process for recruitment. We did have another working party meeting and discuss a few more issues around that. On page 6 or page 8, report on implementation of cyber security and IT health check was going to Finance and Performance Scrutiny Committee, and that has been circulated. And for some reason I've been invited as well, so we'll see what's happening, whether I need to. Hopefully not. The rest are all resolved. Is everybody happy to agree those meeting minutes?
Yes.
Yeah, lovely. Thank you very much. Okay, our third item is disclosure of interests. Does anybody have any interests that they need to declare? No, thank you. And under item 4, questions under other committee procedures, we didn't have any questions submitted. So if we move on to item 5, which is the annual external audit completion report, and so I will hand over to Mark to present his report.
Thank you. Hopefully you can hear me well enough. Apologies not being able to be there today. Apologies, it's just a matter of timing in terms of dozens of audit committees all landing at the same time. Just before I run into the report, I'm conscious I wasn't there, my colleague was there last time. Chair, would you like just to take the report as read, or would you prefer because I'm conscious of new members coming through, etc. I'm quite happy to just do a light touch, but hitting all of the key points just to give members comfort and assurance.
Yeah, I think that would suffice. Yeah, they've all had some of their training, so should be kind of up to speed on it all.
That's right. Well, I did say you would answer all the questions, Mark, in that room, so.
And I have a few questions as well for you later, Mark.
Lovely. Okay, so I'll see if I can get some of them in advance in some way. So, the issue report stays as a draft until we finally get to the position. It summarises the work that we do on the financial statements, and if I take you to here we go, the executive summary, which is page 15 of your pack. So our work as your external auditor is defined by the National Audit Office Code of Audit Practice. And essentially, it sets a standard of and tone across all aspects. And we're responsible for broadly four areas. So the first is to issue an opinion on the financial statements. That's the top box on the right. The audit opinion. Now, the audit opinion we give is full of legalese and risk jargon. And as it says here, we anticipate issuing an unqualified opinion without modification. Essentially, that's actually the opinion that you would prefer to have, because that means there's no issues in the financial statements. Unqualified is good. Unmodified is good. We're responsible under the code to issue a commentary around value for money. I will come back to that shortly. It, in some respects, it's one of the biggest misnomers in terms of what we use, and that it's possible you may think that we issue opinion on value for money. Unfortunately, we don't. We look at kind of particular arrangements around financial planning control. That work always stays live until we sign on the dotted line. And again, it's a form of reverse assurance in that we anticipate having no significant weaknesses in arrangements. Again, that's a clear position, and that's where you want to be. Two other broader aspects of our work sit around what's called the whole of government accounts. That's essentially an assurance return that we do for the National Audit Office. We've received partial instructions on that, but not full instructions to date. So we'll be able to do some of the work on it. We won't be able to finish it until we get instructions from the National Audit Office. That situation is consistently applied across all local authorities, and it's outside your controls of council and mine as an external auditor. The last aspect of our work is called wider powers. And there's lots of different mechanisms that are in place as a public body, giving local electors the opportunity to ask us questions, raise concerns, etc. But I can give you assurance and confirmation that there's been no requirement to do any of that work in itself. The majority of the report will go into the financial statements. So if I take you to the status of the audit, which is section 2. Now, the status of the audit is always live until we sign it on the bottom line. Now, there's always aspects outstanding. And we hopefully yours is in colour, but we use a traffic light rating on what we think at the time of writing any of these ongoing issues might result in a further adjustment to the financial statements. And red is we're pretty dead on. We think something's going to go, something will change. Amber is, well, it could do. And then green is we think we're okay with that. The top three, so if I just take them through in turn, valuation of land and buildings, we're just working through the residual queries. I think the amber there gives us a little bit of headway in the potential for errors, but I'll put it on the lower side of that. The second area is accounting for journals. Now, again, that's relatively, that is very well progressed. Again, I would put that on the lower side of, I don't think there would be anything that's going to arise out of that. We just need to finish that piece of work. The third one is on the pensions. So the pensions is going to hold us up in terms of completing. the figures in the financial statements are obviously very, very big and complex. Ultimately, though, they have no impact on withdrawal council tax, but because of the accounting rules and auditing regulations around it, there's a lot of work that goes into that. One of the ways we're required to take assurance over those numbers is to receive a letter of assurance from the pension fund auditor. And they give us comfort over the controls and the processes that are in place within the pension fund that essentially says, you know, the numbers from the council go into the pension fund, they churn it out, and the numbers that are spitted out at the end can be relied upon. And we're just waiting for that letter. To date, we haven't had a confirmation of when it's going to arrive. And it's very difficult to hedge our bets on what the outcome would be. Typically, so going by past performance, what we found is occasionally there is a requirement to change the numbers in the financial statements as a result of the letter that comes out. Or at least assess whether the numbers in the accounts need to change. So that's just the one that I think we're finding the most uncertain in this. The rest of the aspects are pretty much well in control. And we talk at the bottom here, we have a section about completion procedures. We always put that as amber just because it gives us essentially a bit of room for manoeuvre, but those are aspects that will always stay open until the end of the audit. Apologies, I can't really see the room, so I'm staring at the screen. So if anybody does have a question or wants to interrupt me, then please just shout out. In terms of the rest of the report, section 3 talks about our audit approach and use of experts, but if I take and section 4 talks about significant findings. What that does is we focus our attention, so page 21 of your pack holders. The way we do our audits, we spend additional, we really focus our time on the areas that are most susceptible to the potential for error, their high levels of estimates or judgments, and we need to skin all the stones up and have a look at those. The first one is called management override of controls. Now, again, when we say this is a risk, it's not to say that we think something untoward is going on. It's just that management happens to be in a unique position that if they wanted to override controls and do something, they could do. So we simply, in every audit across the world, design certain types of tests to delve into the details, including using data analytics and data extraction tools. The majority of that work is complete, and there are no issues to bring to your attention. The second area that we always have a look at is the local government pension scheme, fundamentally it's because it's big numbers. We've looked at the majority of the work and the underlying assumptions that underpin it all, and they're in line with what we would expect. As I said before, we're just waiting for that letter of comfort to say that the machine that cranks the handle is operating effectively. The last area that we always spend a lot of time on is land and buildings, investment properties and dwellings. We spend a lot of time on this because their valuation is complex, requires experts to come up with those figures. And we've done a huge amount of work on this to get us to the final stages. We've got, what this page sets out is a lot of the work we've done. We've progressed very substantially into that. There's a few little queries, but that's mainly about just kind of working back through the evidence that we've already got and making sure we've tied it all together. Again, some queries, but nothing that I think is fundamental for the committee to be informed about. Page 24 of your pack just kind of fleshes out a few of the things that we've talked about with management, wider responsibilities. For me, the key bit I'd say is this year there's been pensions particularly have been unbelievably complex, but we're on track to get it done. And fundamentally, we have and we continue to get good officer engagement and good support from your officers in getting us through the audit. So we certainly would bring that to your attention to say that is a positive positive aspect. There are no particular internal control issues, so it's not our responsibility to look at all of the authorities' internal controls. But during the course of our work, we might pick up a few things, and as a result, we might raise a recommendation. Management have not had the chance to come up with a response. That's just due to the timing of the report that we gave to them. In each case, neither of them give us any particular concern, because there are, in both cases, there are compensating controls that are in place, and hence we see them as a low priority. Section six, misstatements. These are just essentially where we've looked at the numbers. So the first page 39, has unadjusted misstatements. So through the course of our work, we set a qualitative threshold called materiality. And if we find errors above that, then we will report that to you as a committee. Management have the opportunity to say they agree, disagree, they will adjust, they won't adjust. And in this case, there is a very small unadjusted item. What we will essentially do is, we have a letter of representation that Simon will sign and say he is content that that has no impact on the financial statements. When taken as a global view, we're satisfied with that response. All we do is report it here. In terms of the adjusted misstatements, whilst there's a big number in terms of short-term investments, that's just moving it from one place to the other. There's nothing wrong with the figure, there's nothing wrong with underneath it. It's just moving it from one place to another in the financial statements. But again, all we're doing is reporting it to you. There are a few items in of disclosures. And then there is an adjustment to the prior period where there's where some capital expenditure is just going to be removed from the account. If I take a step back, I would say, in the scheme of adjustments, I see a lot of these. I see a lot of accounts. I see lots of different issues across sort of 25 different local authorities. This is absolutely on the low side. To some extent, you might challenge us if we didn't find anything, because we do, we do some, such volumes of work. But what I would say is that whilst there are adjustments, they don't loop around to the control recommendations. So if I felt as though all of these adjustments were indicative of poor financial reporting or internal controls, etc., I'd be flowing it into a recommendation for you as a committee to work on, and we haven't done that. So again, that's a form of positive assurance for you as a committee. So after the last bit I will pause on is around the value for money approach. So our work is essentially to look at three aspects of the authority. So we look at the financial sustainability, and that's essentially the audit plans. Sorry, there's some noise in the background there. We look at financial sustainability is essentially looking at the council's level of capital reserves, financial planning, the medium-term financial strategy, etc., and having a look at kind of the core assumptions that underpin that. The theme of governance is about risk management, so we look at how risk management comes together, the committee structure of the council, the functioning of the internal audit, for example. And then improving economy efficiency and effectiveness is essentially around performance management arrangements, so how key performance indicators come together, what do they say, how the authority commissions and procures major contracts. That work stays live, until we issue our report, but at this point in time there's nothing, we have no concerns. We don't go into kind of you're doing well, you're doing good, etc. It's pretty much a blanket, and it's a horrible term that we use. We just say you're adequate. That's the legalese framework that we work to. I'll pause at that point. There's lots of things that sit in the appendices. The only thing that I'd really pull out of that is just to confirm we do we've revalidated our independence and we remain in an independent and objective position.
Okay. Thanks, Mark. Are you still there? Yeah. Okay. Does anybody have any questions? Come on, are you ready to take questions now? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. What I would, I'm just thinking, one last thing. So I know you've got the statement of accounts coming next. The last thing I would say is that I don't see any, based on the report that we've given you, I don't see any reasons why you couldn't accept the financial statements that's on the agenda. There may be some changes from the pension fund. If those changes arise, so if there are some, so I know these are lots of ifs, if there are changes, none of them would impact your general fund, none of them would influence any budget planning or any aspects of, you know, key decision making. So again, I just wanted to put that in context for you.
Okay, thanks, Mark. I'm sure that will help give assurance for that section of the meeting. Okay, questions for Mark at this point.
So I did just have a question along those lines. I mean, I partly answered it there, but you did say a little earlier when we were talking about section four, that the pensions have been especially complex this year. I take that means kind of opposed to previous years. I was just going to ask, just curious really, why is that? Is it to do with kind of high interest rates or, you know, is there a particular reason?
So fundamentally, it's to do with accounting standards. So for the first time in many years, a lot of pension funds, the assets have gone up quite a long way, much higher than they ever have done. And some pension funds around the country have a surplus for the first time ever. And all that does is it triggers a bunch of accounting standards to revisit what it actually means. Yeah, it's accounting led rather than anything else, nothing to do with economic assertions.
It's a technical thing then, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, any other questions? Fred, I've got a few for you. Some of them are kind of around the internal control recommendations. One that I did have a chat with Simon about earlier. Our significant deficiencies in internal control, page 27. It said you identified 11 cases in which councillors haven't returned signed declarations. My one question about that was it councillors in one particular political party, or was it councillors who'd been here for a while and are no longer here, or was there any pattern in it, or was it across everywhere?
I don't know that level of detail, I'm afraid. That's something we can pull that out and perhaps drop that in with through Simon and circulate it around if we see there's a pattern.
Yeah, I just think. Neil, do you want to add something to that?
Yeah. Yeah, hi there. So yeah, I won't be able to help Mark with that, but by all means we can investigate further. But I think it's to do with the outgoing administration and the difficulties we had in just getting returns from some of them. We've got details of who we have and haven't had returns from, but I'm fairly sure that it does relate to the councillors that left us in around May time and didn't necessarily return the forms. I think that is okay. What Mark will find.
So it was to do with not being elected rather than anything else. Okay. Thank you. My other one is kind of around control issues, I guess. Obviously, you've mentioned about we had the issues that kind of signature hadn't been in place. And obviously we are aware that within the finance team in particular, there has been, in all finance teams, there's constraints on staffing and issues with that. And a few of the areas are kind of around reconciliations. The issue within the misstatements on page 29, we've obviously got possibly a reconciliation issue there. And also our prior period adjustment. This was mentioned in last year's queries to the statements of accounts as well, possibly, where within last year's minutes there was a query about the budget for planning regeneration being confused with Loughborough Town Deal money. And it said that external auditor would be auditing that, but they would be separated out in the next report. And I wondered if this was something to do with that splitting out of the money as well, where problems had happened.
Sorry, I was thinking there. I was trying to remember back to last year.
Sorry.
So there's a couple of points. If I'm working backwards from that one, I think I'd have to come back on that last point, because trying to remember back that far, to be perfectly honest, is a bit of a challenge for me. So I'd have to come back on that point. And we're happy to circulate something written to the committee on it.
Mm-hmm.
The other point previous to that was around some of the reconciliation work, etc. I think my only reflection on that is the authority. Some of these, they're relatively trivial adjustments. I don't have any particular concern thematically.
Mm-hmm.
So if this was pervasive or recurrent in any way, that would be a different matter. And we do have that at other authorities.
Yeah.
Missing the odd reconciliation on debtors, it for me is lower down the list of sins to kind of your cash.
Mm-hmm.
Cash and bank things, and even more so in now, I think, to somewhat with the introduction of automated controls, etc., actually they are becoming a little bit more redundant.
Yeah.
Appreciate finance teams across the country are squeezed.
Absolutely.
They really are squeezed.
Yeah.
And as a result, this is why this is low for me, is that actually, if you didn't do it, what would happen? In this case, not a lot.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're missing your bank reconciliations and not getting your cash in, etc., I'd push that up the agenda a little bit higher.
Mm-hmm. But it was just to kind of, is it an overall kind of indicator that there could potentially be issues arising because of the impact of staffing going forward?
It's always going to be a challenge. It's always going to be a challenge. If I step back and I think, if I don't look at that item and I think about the extent of work we do around, just general expenditure testing, business rates, capital additions, and all the substantive testing that we do, and we do a lot, the fact there's only one item out of hundreds,
mm-hmm.
if not thousands, gives you that kind of sense of scale of where things are at.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, some of the others in a way are linked
mm-hmm.
to that potentially, yeah. Which was where my question was coming from.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine, thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions for anybody? No? Are we happy to note Mark's report?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, thank you, Mark. Okay, if we move on to agenda item 6, which is the AGS, starting from page 45, so I will hand over to Simon for this one.
Thank you, Chair. So this is a sort of standard report that comes alongside the accounts, which is it sort of covers the council's governance, as it says really. It's a mix actually. There's some relatively detailed things that cover the accounts, but it's also quite a lot wider than that. So it covers sort of various roles and responsibilities. It covers the roles of scrutiny, things like, you know, are we dealing with freedom of information requests? So it's quite wide ranging. I'll sort of assume that, if there's anything specific, I'll try and answer. I think maybe the thing I suppose I would just point to as illustrative for the well are is on sort of page 50, which actually sets out various roles and responsibilities. So it's sort of council, cabinet and leader, risk management, scrutiny and review, and then the responsibilities of the senior management team. So it just sort of sets out whatever one needs to do. And then a lot of the narrative is about how we sort of go through the process of setting budgets, what the risk management is, how we sort of set these things out, and what the arrangements are of the council. So in a way, it attempts to be a narrative statement of all the things we do on a day-to-day basis, many of which councils will see from a meeting point of view. Some of the things are more officer-driven. So, there are some sort of standard things about sort of qualifications of the chief financial officer, etc., etc. So there's quite a bit in there. It tends to be pretty similar year on year because our arrangements are pretty similar year on year. I think the chair's got a couple of comments in terms of editing we need to do, including something that's going to be a bit of a challenge in terms of how it's changed last year, but basically that's it. So obviously if there are any specific questions, let's try and answer them. Hopefully it's reasonably self-explanatory.
Any questions from anybody?
Seems to be clear.
Do you want me to ask mine first and then it might help? Or?
Yeah, cool. Yeah. That's a good idea.
Okay. On paragraph 19, there is a mistake. I should say 22, 23, first of all.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we have kind of commented previously it would be good to track changes so that we could see it on a year-on-year comparison. So I know they do it now in the risk statement that we get, don't we? I did go through it because in last year's minutes, when we discussed the AGS, it was resolved that the AGS be approved with an amendment to include a specific reference to fraud with regard to whistleblowing on corruption and misuse of power and the inclusion of a reference to officers with regards to the code of conduct. And I did go through the two side by side, and the only change I could find was that the COVID details had been removed. So I asked Simon what had been done with that, if it had been changed, because we resolved that that would be done. And it would be updated, but...
Well, I write some of this, but not all of it, so we obviously missed. Between Adrian and myself, we missed it. And as Adrian's left, I'm going to completely blame him. So we will, we can no doubt add a paragraph to reflect that.
There are some comments on page 56, I've noticed, but... I can't remember off the top of my head, but that was the same as last year, as whether that covered what we were talking about.
No, well, we can do a search on officers and fraud and corruption and whistleblowing, and if there'll either be apparent within the text, or if not, I don't think it's going to be that. It'll probably be easiest just to add a specific paragraph covering those points, so we
okay.
Do that and we can check that out and then. We sign it alongside the statement of accounts in due course. As Mark explained, I would guess that the letter on the pension fund audit is going to be on the critical path. And if we do, although fortunately the numbers wouldn't necessarily affect the general funds, it doesn't actually mean anything in fundamental. If we do have to change the pension fund audit, the way the accounts work is it'll flow through various sections and various numbers, so it won't necessarily be a simple or straightforward job to amend it all, because it would affect a surprising number of numbers in the financial statements. But
can I just query that issue about the whistleblowing? I mean, there is this short sentence, isn't there, at the top of the
page
56. Now, are you saying that maybe that was already there?
I've compared this to last year's statement,
right.
And the last year's statement, we'd still ask for it to be updated.
Okay.
So this is exactly the same as last year's, apart from the paragraph, because the paragraph on COVID obviously being taken out.
Can you just reiterate?
My memory's a bit hazy about last year.
Yeah. Can you just reiterate what needs to be added to that statement then to update it in line with the comments made last year?
Well, I think it's based on the questions that were in there. So I think we probably just need to go through minutes from last year, and maybe the recording from last year, to make sure it's in there, in line with what's written in there.
Fair enough, yep.
So I think there was some typographical errors, which meant it didn't read correctly. But it was my kind of general question, did we do something about that? But because we don't get the track changes, it's really difficult to see what's changed. Yeah. Any other questions?
I'm okay.
No?
Sorry, no.
Okay, are we happy to agree that, obviously, Simon will take a
look. If we agree that, or no, we have to agree to the thing and subject to adding that paragraph in, so we'll correct that. And also that typo on paragraph 19, Laura, which is turn 21-22 to
22-23. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Okay, if we move on to item 7, which is the statement of accounts on page 58 of your report pack. Again, is that up to you, Neil, on this one?
No, it's probably Simon. It's probably myself. I mean, hopefully you're all here, and we did go through the statement of accounts at the training, so hopefully everyone's had a flavour of them. I don't really want to repeat it. I don't receive any particular questions on any of the detail. So hopefully there aren't any, but I'll just take any questions and sort of between myself, Neil, and possibly Mark, we can attempt to answer something. I just will say, reflecting Mark's comment on the pension, but there is a number here that there is a number. So if you look at if you look at the bottom of page, that's my set. If you look at the bottom of page, what is 11 on the account? Let's see if I can find it on the pack. 75 on the pack. So if you go and sort of look at the table, and about 3/4 of the way down, see pension reserve surplus deficit of 60,370,000. So then the sort of restated 31st March 2022 on the left hand side. And then if you go across to the other side, which is actually highlighted in blue, we see a figure of 9 million. So what that does is essentially reflect changes in actuarial assumptions in that all pensions are going to die by the age of 68, but more likely it does reflect that large increase in valuation of assets that Mark explained. So that does flow through into our accounts. Unfortunately, we are still in the deficit position, which, as Mark said, doesn't mean anything as such, but how it does potentially help us when the actuaries do a triennial valuation and we get our employer contribution, that employer contribution will no doubt still increase, but hopefully at a lower level than it otherwise might have done. So it does mean something real in the end, but it flows through in the employer contributions rather than something directly from these numbers. But you can see from those numbers that we are like to the deficit is much lower and it is more positive. And as a complete aside, you know, local government pensions, there are some underlying assets, whereas most pension schemes, the police, the teachers' pensions, etc., they're all sort of pay-as-you-go, so they come out of current taxation. So there is actually some underlying assets, so it is a slightly more healthy position compared to some of the other public sector. That's just an aside, really.
Okay, thank you, Sam. And I think we do need to take some kind of assurance from Mark in his words earlier as well.
Yeah.
You've probably answered my, that was one of my observations anyway, possibly a question, was it, was that reduction a good thing from 69? I assumed yes,
yes,
I was curious.
Absolutely, yeah. It's a deficit, it's
on
a
the
deficit
face of it,
fall.
It seems good. Yeah.
It's a deficit fall, and the problem is, without being too funny about it, the, because the actuals look over such a long period of time, a relatively small change in an assumption about average returns on gilts over the long term, or sort of life expectancies of pensions, etc., can make a large difference to the sort of surplus or
yeah.
deficit we might get. It's just,
it's the only
accurate.
Bit I understand.
Sorry?
Pensions is the only bit I really understood.
Right, good. You can do the training on that bit next year.
It used to be my job.
Right.
Can I just ask why a number of numbers now are highlighted in blue, not just the one you pointed out? What does the highlighting suggest?
I think they reflect the audit work that Mark's team still have to do. So we've got council, so if you remember about the app, so I think if we go back to Mark's traffic light, so I think these are areas where we're still looking at. So
yeah.
the sub-assets one there, and then obviously the 432, that's the subtotal, so that would change if the audit work change. The pension scheme as well is in there.
Okay. So it's all the ones that might get adjusted.
Yes.
Yeah.
So hopefully they'll just be the same, or any adjustments will be relatively small. But the challenge, of course, is if you change anything in the fixed asset, there are some quite detailed notes that will flow through there, and then it always flows through the reserves as well.
Yeah.
So hopefully nothing will change. Fingers crossed. But
yeah.
That's what those blue things, I think, reflect Mark's traffic lights.
Right, thank you. That's good.
Any other questions?
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know what page it's on now. I could probably find it, but it's perhaps not very helpful. But I noticed this capital, I'll get to it in a minute, was quite underspent.
Ah. Yes.
Why?
So unfortunately this is a long-standing, there's a little bit of a long-standing issue with ourselves. So there's two areas of capital. So on there's the housing revenue account, which is sort of most, you know, it's one of the areas that's very well discussed. But we have had issues with the Decent Homes contractor. So we had a contractor recently go into administration, which hasn't helped at all. So we have lots of. So basically, we've got the money, but we haven't operationally got the wherewithal to actually deliver in the schemes.
Mm.
And we've also got, in the general funds scheme, we've got a couple of what are described as provisional schemes. So we've put place marker amounts in there of relatively substantial amounts, so 5 million for regeneration, 10 million forward funding for investment in the enterprise zone. And there's one or two other areas like that, but they're probably the big two. And we put them in the capital programme to enable us to react to opportunities as and when they arise, but they're not necessarily things we would know about now. So we've got so-called live schemes where, you know, we know what we're going to do, there's a project plan, we've got a contractor, and we should be delivering those within the
year. These are sort of speculative, aren't they?
Yeah, so the enterprise zone forward funding, for example, that requires one of the sites to come up with a scheme, which then did go through the LEP, Government Local Enterprise Partnership. That's going to change. But as it happened, we've done two lots of forward funding with Charmed Campus. So we've just completed a 4.1 million forward funding for themselves. So if you look at the capital monitoring report that's going to come through, you will see that we've forward fund of that 10 million is now down to 5.8. And what we'll probably do, in fairness, through the capital plan out term, which will come forward in, I think, June or July, we'll probably suggest we carry those forwards to take advantage of anything else. The regeneration one, essentially, would be one where if we had an opportunity to get hold of a key site in one of the town centres, it gives us an amount of money to enable us to do that. It enables us to be a bit more agile, because if we didn't have it in there, we would have to go to a council meeting to put it in through the budget policy framework to put it in, whereas Cabinet they're a bit more regular and logistically they're a bit easier to arrange. We can arrange an additional council meeting, but you can imagine Laura will tell you more than I will, but the logistics involved in that will be very significant. This, you know, and so it basically just allows us to react more rapidly. But as a result of that, there's obviously big slugs of the capital expenditure, the capital plan that doesn't necessarily get spent year on year. So some of it is project management, some of it is contractors, and some of it is just what we've included in the capital plan. So it's always a mix of reasons.
Right, okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Simon. Any other questions for anyone? No? Thank you. So are you happy to note the report and also that you agree the recommendations on page 58 of the pack? So first of all, being the statement of accounts is approved, and myself, I'm authorised to sign it on behalf of the audit committee, pending obviously any issues that might arise. And also that the letter of representation in Appendix B be approved for signature.
There's one or two bits.
We do have some changes.
I was going to ask, did you need an authorisation from the committee to make any changes arising
to the letter?
To the letter or to the accounts. So I think with the accounts, what I would suggest is that if the committee offers, given the unbalance between what Mark said and what he heard, if the committee allows authorisation for myself to agree with any revisions to numbers in conjunction with the chair, and then if we're both happy, we will sign. If there's anything very, very fundamental, I guess we will come back, but from my
we need to use the words maybe material. If there's anything material, then we'll come bring it back potentially.
We could use the term material. That would be, we could use Mark's term of material. The danger is with the pension, we could get a material amount that's not significant.
Yeah. Okay. I think Mark's got a suggestion to make to the wording.
Obviously, it's for yourselves to decide. You may want to consider whether it would impact the general fund as your determination, rather than, as Simon says, pension fund numbers may or may not change, and if they change by a big number, you're not tying yourself into bringing it back. But if it was a material number affecting the general fund, and therefore your tax on your council tax draw, etc., I think if that was the case, I personally would be insisting it would come back. But only if it was substantially material and influencing decision makers.
Just thinking, the wording that we had last year was that the statement of accounts be approved, and that the chair be authorised to sign the accounts on behalf of the audit committee, subject to any adjustments that may be identified by external auditors as they finalise their work in consultation with the Section 151 officer, and to be notified to other members of the committee.
Better.
Is that an appropriate wording?
I mean, I will say that if Mark advises us that we would need to come back, then
we will
come back.
I agree with that word. I propose we use that wording.
Well, that's, I think Laura or her equivalent have carefully crafted it last year. So
I've got a copy of it here if you want to just write it out from it. And then we also had some...
The letter of representation. So there's just a couple of, potentially a couple of typos on within it, Mark. So there's, I think there was a reference to the operations of the business rather than the operations of the council.
Oh, yeah.
And then,
so that's in the Ukraine section and the current banking crisis. You mentioned company and business rather than council.
Yeah. And then.
And then it should be sincerely rather than faithfully. Because it's not so.
So what I've seen before in other oil things is actually yours truly, which I don't know quite where you use yours truly, but I have seen that. Or if you want to be slightly more informal, I've put lots of love. But we don't know each other that well, don't we?
We should do by now.
Well, me and Mark. keep it secret.
So that's the Greek, just subject to those two corrections then, just to be clear.
Well, I've got it, so there's reference to business and reference to company, so reference to business, reference to company, and your sincerely rather than the salutation at the end. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're happy with those two recommendations.
Yes.
Happy to note it. Thank you very much, everybody.
If you look at the pack mark, it's highlighted in yellow, so hopefully it's reasonably apparent. I doubt you'll have a serious problem. Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. Thanks, Neil. You got off the hook lightly there, didn't you?
Looks pleased.
Okay, if we move on to item 8, Treasury Management Mid-Year Review, April to September. I appreciate we're now in November and we're looking backwards from September. It's a difficult one sometimes to get your head around. Simon, it's over to you again.
Right, so this one...
Page
this
136 of your pack.
Maybe if I look at my pack rather than 136. So this is one that actually went to it went to Cabinet, I think, last week. So it's been to Cabinet already. I mean, I think the messages in here are this is a mid-year review. We've not done anything, we've not changed any policies since the start of the year, so that we are running with the same policies that we had previously. We haven't done anything unusual in terms of our borrowing. In fact, I don't think we've actually done any borrowing at all. So we are well within inside the operational and authorised limits that we set out in the original Treasury Management Statement, which was part of the capital strategy, which ultimately came to Council in February. So essentially we're operating completely normally. There is a note in here which does say, so one of the things that again we spoke about before, the interest rates are going up, so there is a comment, so we are performing quite well. So I think there is, apologies, I can't quite remember where it was, but we are actually ahead of budget, so we are actually performing well, which you would probably expect given the interest rates have been increasing and are likely to stay, when the interest rates are going to fall, pays you money, takes your choices, again, it's sort of every day we get other things to look at. Where does the council invest? So there are various drafts, but if you look at Appendix 1, which is on page 150, you can just see at the end of September, where our money was held. So you can see it's a total of 59 million in terms of sort of short-term money market investments. You can see the interest rates on the right-hand side, so you can see that we're doing pretty well. So I think the first 6 months, the average was 4.something%. So if you look at those numbers there, you can see that things of improvement. On the property fund, properties have been a little bit trickier at the moment, so we are looking at those. So we've had a few years where our returns were obviously better than the money market, that we're now seeing a reverse of that position and there are more challenges around the property fund. So we are monitoring that closely. So there may be some more challenges with some one or two of those bits of investment. But overall, the investment portfolio is doing pretty well. I'm pretty comfortable that we will might be ahead of we're going to end up being ahead of budget this year.
Okay. And I guess the upside to capital budgets falling behind a bit is that we've got investment interest of 1.3 million top up.
It's going to get slightly more interesting as from next year, because we've got two lots of debt. So the general fund, we've got debt of £2 million, which was taken out in 1984 at an interest rate of 11.625% for we don't know what, to be absolutely honest. But we are able to repay that in June, so that's good news. But the we announced we also took out £79 million of worth of debt on the HRA, which all councils had to do as part of the government. The government got rid of what was called the housing subsidy arrangement, which was a sort of, which started with the government subsidising councils with housing stock to operate their housing revenue account. At the end of it, it's actually most councils, and we were one, were into a negative housing subsidy situation, so we had to pay the government for the pleasure of having our housing stock. So, and with that, so but anyway, about 10, I think it was 2012-13, we took out debt of various amounts covering this 79 million. The first million is due for repayment in June, in October 2024. So the next treasury management strategy will cover what we're planning to do with the debt as it falls due, and probably the first 2 or 3 years, given we've got financing funding, we will probably repay that debt rather than refinance it, given where we are with the interest rates. But anyway, that's something we'll see coming forward in the next capital strategy. So I'll advertise that, and the treasury management strategy is maybe you may have to modify it to sort of reflect where we are in a more higher interest rate environment. But this mid-year, it's all in line with the strategy. We're all in line with our limits. We're doing well against the budget, so nothing particularly significant to report.
Can I ask a minor question about capital expenditure? So I've noted the underspend that we just discussed. So I just want to focus on the one significant overspend, which is the Shepshed Public Realm. That looks quite significant, and I just wondered whether there were any simple reasons for why it went so over budget.
Going back into the financial statements.
Yeah. Well, it's on page 144 of this.
Okay.
The interim assessment of capital spend.
Yeah, so there's two we've done. One is Bedford Square, which is nearer completion. One is Shepshed. So Shepshed, which is sort of underway. I think Shepshed, we may have had some change in scope as much as anything else, but the challenge with these public realm projects, well, our lessons learned is don't do them, really, but the problem is that really, ideally, the county council should do public realm that involves anything to do with highways. They didn't really want to do these, so we took them on. But the problem is, as soon as you get under the road service, you find some services that need upgrading or you have to divert.
Yeah.
Then you're into a world of pain dealing with sort of Western Power, Severn Trent Water, or other people who aren't particularly quick at returning your phone calls, and then they don't necessarily turn up, and then you have contractors on site and you can't do anything for 6 weeks. So,
right.
So I have a mental list of people not to deal with. So Network Rail, Western Power, Severn Trent Water, East Midlands Drains, Diocese of Leicester's also on there as well.
They'd have to do it three times, their little searches that they were reporting on as well, aren't they?
Yeah, it's very, very difficult. So on Bedford Square, we've still got some ongoing snagging. So again, and of course, the other thing is at the moment we've had very inflationary construction costs. So things which seemed, so I think on Bedford Square we had some granite at a cost, and then that sort of doubled or tripled in price. So
they are
difficult. Yeah, it's not an ideal scenario. I think on Shepshed we're being rather more circumspect, but nonetheless, I think with the change of scope and the inflation, we're still finding costs are going up. So,
okay, thank you. Any other questions?
Yeah, I've got one. It might be a bit silly.
There's no silly questions.
This will be difficult, this one, I think. Very silly.
When people start with, it's a silly question.
So, looking at the table of investments on page 150,
yeah,
and looking at the interest rates, and looking how much you've got invested in each separate account.
Yeah.
What makes you decide how much money to put where?
Right.
So, for example, you've got 3,000 there at 5.87 and 5,000 at 4.88.
Yeah.
So logically, that doesn't make a great deal of sense, but I'm sure there's some logic there.
So in the treasury management strategy, it is actually that we sort of use Link Asset Services who advise on this, but there are various parameters that are that we make sure we fit into, that make sure we comply with when we're doing our investments. So there are limits on individual counterparties, there are limits on individual institutions, there are limits on individual counterparties, limits on also the durations by which we would put our assets, and then everything comes color-coded with a risk. So there are limits to how much we have in sort of pink area or the orange area, so we don't have too many, we don't put all of our money out at the same duration, we don't put all our money out at the same institution, we don't put anything out at all the same risk level. So we put something out at a slightly higher risk level, it tends to get a higher return, so we sort of balance it like that. And that's all set out actually in the treasury management strategy statement. So we make sure we try and comply with that. And if anything goes wrong, we can say, well, you know, we have actually complied with our rules. Hopefully, we have complied with the rules. So if you look at some of these, why would we invest? You know, why would we invest so much? Why didn't we invest at all at 4.99 or 5.87 rather than 4.88? Well, you know, to some extent, that's due to the date of maturity. So those, you know, large bank. Yeah, you can see that's coming through 2024, so that's later, reflecting higher interest rates. So, but this is actually at a point in time, so if you were to go and have a look at what we've got, you know, every morning it changes pretty much. So if you were to have a look at what we've got invested now, you would get different numbers with a different spread. It would look sort of similar, but it would certainly not be identical. If you look at, you know, down the bottom, so the 12 million Federated Hermes, 12 million, that's literally, we put it in so we can get it out pretty instantly to make sure we can do things like pay the payroll or you know, pay, make supply runs. So it's the mantra is security, which is number one, then liquidity, and then return. So it's a bit of sort of glib boilerplate, but there, you know, so those three things we balance, and then there's quite a detailed framework of which we invest, to which we would invest in to make sure we sort of comply with those three things.
Normally when you get the treasury management training, they'll cover all of that sort of thing.
No, that makes perfect sense. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Any other questions? No? Are we happy to, although it says in here, agree the recommendation, we haven't actually got one, so are we happy to note the report?
Yeah, this is one that to the Cabinet yes. Board. If you were have major problems, you could ask Cabinet to revisit it, but if you're happy enough with it, I think it's a note one.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Are there any issues raised during the meeting that we wish to take forward to scrutiny? No? Lovely. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks Mark.
Thanks Neil. Thanks Robin. Hi.
Bye Jane. Bye everyone. Have a nice evening, guys.
Thank you.